Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta you show me if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind of beauty of life. But when my mom said again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging. Splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish scales the cops love. The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case. But the wish at the police, look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new here
revolution,
we new.
Every warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolution, every warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. Of what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. The struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that.
Mr.
my innards.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land, revolutionary ingredients. Welcome to another edition of Jordan University Radio. I'm your host, Blue Mind is Secure, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality into the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Fifth goal, prepare a new African prisoner for release, producing new African citizens. Our overall goal is to transform the whole prisoner slave complex into the prison system, to the big issues learned through educational means. While we educate and prepare brothers and sisters to come up to the streets to establish institutions and programs to benefit to the people's needs. Before I bring in a guest tonight, I'll let go of some events that happened in history during this week. Okay. On July 23rd, 1872, Elijah McCoy, who flawed work as an inventor, led to the saying that Real McCoy won his first patent of more than 50 for a lubricator for heavy machinery. In 1900, Pan African Congress were held in London, England, and organized by Sylvester Williams. In 1942, declaring segregation a basic necessity, Alabama governor refuses a federal contract with a non-discrimination clause. Jackie Robinson, in 1962, was named to the Baseball Hall of Fame. In May 1968, a four-hour gun battle occurred between Cleveland police and members of the Black Nationalist Party in the Nation of Libya, Otmar Evans. The conflict results in the deaths of three new African activists, three police officers, and a bystander, and ends with Evans surrendering to police. Evans is ultimately convicted of murder and sentenced to death. On July 24, 1651, Anthony Johnson, a free new African who was probably one of the first 20 indigenous servant slaves, received a grant of 250 acres of land in Northampton County, Virginia, for importing five white persons. Johnson established a settlement on the banks of the Ponquatoula River. In 1893, Charles S. Johnson, socialist, was born. In 1900, the race riot occurred in New Orleans. In 1967, from the 24th through the 26th, a riot occurred in Cambridge, Massachusetts. National Guard was mobilized. In 1972, the Washington Star exposed the Tuskegee syphilis experiment, a study conducted on new African sharecropping in Alabama by the CDC. Hold up. Okay, I'm back. Where was I at? Hold up. Okay. July 25th, 1918, 25th through the 28th, a race riot occurred in Chester, Pennsylvania. Three new Africans and two whites were killed. In 1916, Garrett Morgan used a gas mask he invented to rescue 32 men trapped in an explosion in an underground tunnel. In 1946, a mob with 30 armed and unarmed white men lynched two new African couples, George and Dorsey, and Roger and Dorothy Malcolm, near Moore's Ford Bridge in Walton County, Georgia. In 1964, a race riot partner in Rochester, New York, Governor Nelson Rockefeller mobilized the National Guard. Today, dated July 26, 1847. President Joseph Jenkins Roberts, a native of Virginia, declared Liberia an independent republic. 1865, Patrick Francis Healy, the first new African awarded a PhD degree, had final examinations at Louvain in Belgium. In 1918, from the 26th to 29th, a race riot occurred in Philadelphia. Three whites and one new African were killed. In 1948, President Truman issued executive order number 9881, directing equality of treatment and opportunities in the armed forces. In 1949, hundreds of white men hunt and lynch Ernest Thomas, who along with 16-year-old Charles Greenlee and two other new African men were falsely accused of rape in Grove Lane, Florida in 1953. Fidel Castro began an armed struggle for social revolution by leading an attack on the Mercado barracks in Cuba. In 1970, we witnessed the assassination of the People Party chairman, Carl Hampton, in Texas. Okay. On July 27, 1816, Fort Blount on the Apache Tocola Bay, Florida, attacked by U.S. troops. The fort, which was held by fugitive slaves and Native Americans, was taken after a siege of several days. In 1898, Ollie Queen Mother Moore, esteemed elder and freedom fighter born in Louisiana. In 1880, Alexander P. Ashbourne patented process for refining coconut oil. 1919, the anti-New African riot began in Chicago, Illinois, part of the Red Summer. 1962, Martin Luther King Jr. was jailed in Albany, Georgia. In 1967, a multiple-day uprising in Detroit ends, leaving more than 40 people dead, most of whom were New African, and killed by police. On July 28, 1868, the Secretary of State Seward issued proclamation certifying ratification of the 14th Amendment. 1915, U.S. Marine landed in Haiti, and the country became a U.S. protectorate. In 1916, police in Louisville, Kentucky, arrested at least three people as part of an ongoing plan to aggressively enforce legal bans on interracial relationships. In 1917, 10,000 new Africans marched down Fifth Avenue in New York City in silent parade, protesting lynches and racial indignities. On July 29, 1835, white Southerners publicly burned anti-slavery pamphlets they had seized from the U.S. mail. In 1880, Nancy Williams, a new African woman, placed an ad for information about her daughter 20 years after she was sold away from them, like thousands of new African people who tried to find their lost relatives after emancipation. In 1895, the first National Conference of the Colored Women of America held in Boston, Massachusetts. In 1966, a counter-coup in Nigeria, a ransom was captured. In 1975, General Yakubu Gowon, head of Nigeria Provisional Military Government, was deposed while he was attending a meeting of the OAU in Uganda. You know, those events happened in history during the week, you know, because there was more, but it was some. Now, I'd like to thank everybody who joined our broadcast in 2014. I also want to thank everybody who been currently educating themselves in their community and their environment and doing the work. I want to send a shout out to all the political prisoner of war, above my enemy lines, who's my enemy line, who's currently educating themselves and doing the work. I was sidetracked right quick. Hold up. Yes, if you're doing the work, you know, I want to salute y'all. And I also let you know that there's people out here who love you, and you're doing the work and keep doing it. You know, tonight, I'd like to welcome to the show, brother, I want to say that the God, Edward Sunyez Allah Rodriguez. Please, God, your line is open. Go ahead. Introduce yourself. First, I'll thank you for coming to our broadcast. Please. First, I thank you for coming to our broadcast.
Oh, no doubt. It's an honor to be on here, man. I'm Sunyez Allah, honorably known as Edward Rodriguez. Yeah, man, I have many aliases too, man. Skillet Straight Low, Hector Lovo, Sinatra, a whole bunch of stuff. But yeah, I'm Sunyez Allah, man. I'm a writer, author, you know, I'm a builder, 5%er, whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Yes, first I'll let, thank you for coming to our broadcast. Sure, you're not really understanding. Thank you for working on you in the past, working you in the present, and working you in the future, right? All that salute you for that, man. And may a positive being upon your endeavors. First, I'd like to know, tell the people about the 5%ers. You know, people hear the term the 5%ers. What does that mean? You know, what does it mean to be a 5%er?
I would say to keep it most simple, the to be a 5%er means that just that you don't see and you actively don't see a mysterious being, energy, or force being above you, you know?
Okay.
So we don't deal with a mystery god of any sort, you know? We don't call it the universe. We don't call it a force. We don't call it anything. And once that happens, once that requisite is understood, then we start to study the knowledge of ourselves. Because in the knowledge of ourselves, we start to realize through the study of sciences, mathematics, and the details of all these things, and the teachings that our elders gave us, though, that started this nation, we start to see that we are ourselves the true and living gods, the true and living earths, you know, the creators of our own reality, this creation, you know? And that's it in a nutshell. Like, if I had to describe it in the most basic way, you know what I mean? The history of the nation has its own history, you know, coming out of, you know, when Allah the Father left the nation of Islam, you know, certain teachings that they call the supreme wisdom came with us as the 120 lessons.
Yes,
but Allah the Father devised supreme mathematics and supreme alphabets and supreme mathematics for us to understand ourselves, understand our nature as creators and the nature of creation, the law and order of the universe, you know? And with those teachings we memorize, we apply to all things. So to say, when we say that the original man is God or the original man is the original woman is the earth, this is not a definitive answer as far in the type where you say it and it is so. It's more so a definitive answer where you say it and you constantly research it. You constantly live it out. You constantly apply it, though. And us seeing ourselves as the supreme beings, the supreme creators of all of this reality, this entire universe, instead of putting us in a lordship of worship, it puts us in a stewardship, you know, of being responsible for not only ourselves, but for everyone that's around us. I'd say that in a nutshell. I had to describe it as quickly as I could, you know, and as succinctly.
True indeed. You know, I understand that. True indeed. You know, many times we hear the terms what today in mathematics and what the science of the day, those particular terminology, right? What did that actually mean? You know what I'm saying? What did that actually mean? And can you tell the people what are the supreme mathematics?
Right. So when I say that Allah the Father left the nation of Islam, the main issue that he had was their teaching said that the original man is God, right? It said the black man, the Asiatic black man is God, right? And under the question, who is the original man? But they weren't being taught that they are God right now. They were taught that they are Muslims, those who submit to the will of Allah, who came in the person of Master Far Muhammad. That wasn't good enough. And when Allah the Father left, he said, I'm Allah right now. And that's why he said he is Allah. And he started to teach the people that would most understand it, and those became the youth. And not, you know, and the youth that were downtrodden, that were around him, that were willing to learn. And during the time that started to teach, he started to devise supreme mathematics and supreme alphabet. The supreme mathematics being a definite words for each numeral, each of the 10 numerals, right, 1 through 9 and 0, that not only define the law and order of the universe, but the nature of our reality as creators, right? So it would be knowledge, wisdom, and understanding would be that 1, 2, and 3. So one, a person, what, has this original idea, this original fact, this original truth, and they, what, engage it in use and develop a wisdom with it. And with that wisdom comes an understanding, an insight, right? A revelation of its purpose, though, and then they live that out, and we continue on with the mathematics. So these mathematics, all of the mathematics have a principle in this reality of creation. And when we say like things like what's today's mathematics is because one of the, that particular activity is what is most popular and what's known about us or heard about us. And we take the numeral of the day. So today is, today is July 26th. So with the supreme mathematics, that would be 2 is wisdom and 6 is equality. And most 5%ers would also born them. In other words, they would put them together to make a principled idea out of them as well and merge the principles. So it would be wisdom, equality, all being born to build or destroy. So they basically be adding the 2 and the 6 together to get 8, right? Basically, it's an exercise to merge these principles that we deal with. And by merging and understanding how the principles blend together, are useful together, work together, then we are able to see ourselves and work with the principles and have a command of our reality. And so that's why questions is what's today's mathematics stuff is so important, because in the way that we use them, we understand ourselves better and we become more focused on our own principles that we've recognized, right, and learn to apply them.
Okay. Yes, sir. Okay, so what's the science behind your name?
My name is from the Supreme Alphabet. So a lot of gods, as I was taught, we get our names from the Supreme Alphabet. We devise something of meaning that says who we are, who we intend to be, and what we see as our nature, you know? And my name, Sunyaz, is derived from the Supreme Alphabet. So it means, it's an acronym. So S-U-N-E-Z means Savior of the Universe Now shows and proves the E, equality of Z, zigzag, zig. Zigzag, zig means knowledge, wisdom, understanding. So it basically means the Savior of the Universe Now shows and proves the equality of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. Or simply put, Sun is Allah, you know? Because we see as we have on our universal flag, we have the sun, moon, and star as representing the man, woman, and child, the black family. The God that taught me and the God that brought me to Allah School of Mecca, where I learned, the sun was both was in his name as well, so it was a big deal. And I come from a neighborhood in Brooklyn called Sunset Park. So sun was a thing that was always, I was seeing it everywhere, you know. I'm from Sunset Park. The God Day Sun brought me to the school, right, because we were writers together in all of these hip-hop magazines. And so I devised my name that way. I gave it an accent because I came from a Puerto Rican neighborhood and I wanted them to know that we are also the true and living gods, but also for other people that are not of Latino background, not of the Latin Caribbean and so on and so forth, that they would know that they also have an Afro-Indigenous background as well and are original people. So that was the mentality when I created the name Sunya.
Okay, I appreciate this. I appreciate it, God. A minute time we hear the name Clarence 1380, or we hear the name Father Lie. Your name comes up in a lot of the FBI documents, especially with mm-hmm. the Bureau of Special Services, right? You know, where was it that made him a target for the FBI? What made him a target for the FBI?
What wouldn't seem to make him a target, you know? He taught the downtrodden, though, so he didn't really look for good kids, you know, kids with good grades and things like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was teaching the kids doing things on the street that they shouldn't have been doing, you know, and he collected them in mass. So one thing that you would think that would keep him off the radar is that he advocated that they not have weapons of any kind. He advocated that they live by the laws of the society, and even if they happen to have done things or doing things to not represent this, not wear the universal flag, not represent this nation. And at the same time, he advocated peace, you know, so he wasn't really in agreement, though, with the all-out by any means necessary that many of the black revolutionary groups were about. you know. He certainly was on the radar because out of all the black revolutionary groups, though, he, in the 1960s in Harlem, though, he had the most people, you know. Nobody had as many youth as he had. So he had a way of pulling in the youth that other organizations just couldn't match up with, you know. And they were effective because he was getting them to continue school. He was getting them to be on the right path, you know. And, you know, the cliche is that people are always scared of, like, black revolutionaries, militants doing something. But if you get them in mass and you see a mass amount of original people actually building their own and having their own and being viable in the community and able to sustain themselves, that's also a big problem as well. And I would say that's the problem that, you know, Allah's existence was igniting among, you know, the oppressor, you know? And he had an interesting, it's very interesting because the father taught us, though, not to have any kind of leadership. You know what I mean? He didn't want us to have overt leaders. You know, that was a head that could quickly be decapitated and destroy the body of a nation, you know? And yet he also taught us to have a leadership by best knower. Whoever's the best know of the particular field that we're dealing with and engaging in, to actually pass that baton to the youth that is most able. So it's always been very youth driven. Just as one of our famous sayings that he said that we always say is the babies are the greatest, you know what I mean? So that was always a focus. So I think that even though FBI and all these groups, COINTELPRO, they certainly had the eyes on the father, and, you know, the father was assassinated, so I wouldn't put it past them having something to do with that. But it was also interesting that he was able to work with politicians and work with government officials to do things for us that we never had before, you know, community building. He was great at that, you know, and the first school that we have, a law school in Mecca, where I teach, that building and that land was given to us, and, you know, by Mayor John Lindsay while he was alive in 1967, so that we can do what we do in them, you know. And so I think that's really the thing. It's a very contradictory thing, you know what I'm saying, where you see all these things that seem to be okay with the government, you know, but there are also a lot of things that aren't, though. Because as more and more people learn a reality that says, wait a minute, this particular spirituality, let alone whether we research it or not to see if the science that they speak of is true, if people start to see this, whether they see it as an actual fact that they study as a science or they see it as a belief that they believe, if people start walking around and start saying, I do not believe in a mystery God, I will not have that glass ceiling that will cut me off and say, listen, I don't know what else I can do. I'll wait for a mystery God to do the rest for me. Tears down a major institution that to me, For all the good that or sustainment of survival that is able to have, the institutions of church and religion have ultimately done more worse than good, you know. And that would be one of its topics, you know. Apparently we have a eradication of that, though, you know. And no matter how well-meaning in society, as we do, we are peaceful, we don't advocate violence, none of those things. We advocate being great builders in the societies of whatever society we're in, whether it be the United States or another country that we're in. Just the nature of our teachings, though, eventually would put us in some type of conflict, you know. So with that said, I would say it's a lot of different contradictions and hypocrisies that are drawn out by the oppressor in our reality. No.
Yes, you know, I'll add on to that. You know, just for the listeners and the people who are going to be listening, people listening now, people listening in the future, right?
You know, Father Allah, while he was in the Nation of Islam as Clarence 13X, he was student minister on Malcolm X on Temple Number 7-8. Temple Number 7 was the largest temple or mosque in the Nation of Islam. So it had various temples all over, you know what I'm saying, from Harlem to Long Island, Brooklyn, Bronx, and so forth and so on, right? And like the God, Sunya was saying, you know, it says the original man that he's about to make on Supreme Planet, Father, Spirit, God, and Universe, right? That's said in the student enrollment, which all this Islam members must go through in order to get the eggs and letter from from Mecca and in Chicago. The Mecca for the gods of Earth is in Harlem. Now, when you look at those things, that's a challenge, basically saying, okay, I'm going to challenge the temple and say we all the God and no other manifestation. What I'm saying is all to say that Father Allah had the power and ability to ignite the youth. In fact, a lot of the youth that was in the neighborhoods were part of different gangs, different sets, different clubs, the Courts of Lords, different gangs, Gladiators, so forth and so on, the Blood Brothers, all your other street gangs. He civilized these brothers and sisters and brought them to the nation, brought them to the 5-10 nation. Now the nation goes, he civilized those people. And also their influence span to the prison system, expand to the hip-hop arena. You know, in fact, a lot of people who started hip-hop have always been 5% of the suits in the jump. You know, it started all that. Even the turns, what peace and what word up and B-boy stands, you know, you stand on your square, you know, different things like that, right? You know, just what people thoughts and mind and their ideas. And another thing is that the 5% had an active involvement with a lot of the elders from Ram, a lot of the elders from the Temple of Sango, which is Baba Surgeon out of Fume, Queen Mother Moore, and other individuals, especially in development of what they want to term at that time in Harlem in 66, what they want to term the Round Bay Black Panther Party. There was a lot of 5% that were part of that. And then also the association with Dr. John Henry Clark, who helped Malcolm X build an organization, African American Unity, and so forth and so on. All these people considered to be terrorists or, you know, security threats. So, you know, not only did Father Allah have that stipulation on him by doing the work he was doing, he also hung around the individuals that had that type of stipulation as well, right? Just for the people who were listening, right, if they want to do the research later on in the future. You know, I just had to share that, you know, now, itself is a beautiful thing, you know, learning who you are, learning yourself, manifesting your degrees, holding your degree, adding on, building, you know, building and destroying, the universal flag, the colors of gold and black are beautiful colors, you know, and it also led into a lot of conflict among other people, such as the Latin Kings, right, in the prison system in New York, as well as with the bloodline, you know, I mean, on United Blood Nation in the prison system as well. So it's a lot of different politics when we deal with certain things. And it brings to my question, right? Is the 5% nation a gang?
You know, our national spokesman who died, you know, years ago, Dumar YD, would go speaking in colleges throughout the country, and he had a whole lecture showing and proving how we were and are not a gang. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The teachings that we have, though, they go everywhere. You know what I'm saying? And
yes, sir.
And they were meant to be taught to the people that needed the most. You know, so they ended up going exactly in the prison systems. If you ever, you know, when people get knowledge of self, for example, the way I got it, when we get knowledge of self and we are of the able ability to teach and of that set ability, we're often given a task of writing to brothers in jail, writing back to brothers in jail that are locked up, that are seeking guidance. So we take an active role in engaging those in the prison system and trying to educate them and trying to uplift them, you know. And many of the students that have come into my classroom over the years are people that have come out of the prison system, you know. So, you know, it's only logical that that people try to have a
if they need a something negative to say about us, they could say that we're in the prisons and we're doing this. We're also very, because we were in the streets so successfully, and because we also influence a lot of people's actual culture, right? Like we said about hip-hop and things like that, it influenced a lot of other gang culture. Like, you know, it doesn't always go the positive route. You know, when you see Latin King Colors and stuff like that, or you see people's teachings like the Zulu Nation, a lot of people's teachings and ideas and colors and symbols comes from the success of what we were doing. So that, you know, that naturally affected everybody, you know, positively and negatively, depending on how they wanted to take it, you know. You know, you could put your things out in this world. It's like, you know, when we teach knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, a man has his own understanding that is based on true knowledge that he has used and has become wisdom in his own experience. But when he lives it out as a culture, it's already out in the world. And the power that it has would give him an equality, a balance, a proper position and mindset that was greater than before he manifested that. But how it's deemed throughout the whole world, it may be different to everyone else, you know. So imagine yourself, you write something very positive, but what if people take it the wrong way? Not everyone will take it the right way. If you make a song that is positive, but people take it the wrong way, you know, you can't really guarantee that everyone will take the positive understanding that you made into a living culture that spread out to the world in the right way. You know, that never is the case, you know. So that has happened the same. So there's a lot of assumptions like this comes from the prisons and things like that, you know, but that's not the case. A lot of that is the true facts that many of the elders that first learned this knowledge, they had difficulties in and out of the prison system, you know what I mean? So they were works in progress, you know what I mean? They were works in progress, though. And it took them a while to learn how to really utilize this knowledge, which is very, you know, it is very simple to understand, very difficult to live out. And it took them years to develop, you know, and it's only in this generation, over 50 years later, that you see a mass amount of 5%ers that are actually family men, successful at whatever they endeavor into. You know, but just like anything in any original people, any black and brown people in the oppressive society, we still have our pitfalls. We still have our difficulties. So that would be my answer to that.
Yes, sir. That priest, you know, myself, I got knowledge of self and born Bill. Okay, behind enemy lines. And during that time, behind enemy lines, we had a cipher, and we were in communication with Master My Significant, who at that time, during the early 2000s, was a Nation Prison Coordinator of the Nation Guard of Earth, a law school in America, right? And, you know, he just sent a lot of literature, lessons, you know, he's a queer brother, you know, just keep you on point, keep you being your square, right, at that time in particular, right? So I just want to send a shout out to the elder, you know, for doing so, for making it understood and known for the prison masses, you know, the prison line, with the education in regard to what it actually means to be a true living, you know, what it actually means to be so. And also during this time, I gained my understanding in regards to why the Nation of the Earth would consider a security threat in the state of South Carolina, why brothers were getting more time for having lessons, and they were forcing brothers to denounce themselves or get more time, and just all kind of other crazy, confusing thing, because the state of South Carolina feared the aspect of brothers who were conscious, aware, who were actually building, but they seen them as a security threat. They went to the feds, went and got a notarized all over the state that had been a security threat. You know, it became very court cases. You know, just for the people who were listening, right? You know, to what's going on. People can get an understanding of certain things. You know, you can pull these cases up. They're documented. You know, they're documented. You pull them up. You see what's going on. You can see the condition of brothers who are still there. Probably tell you the history of verbatim because people are still there in South Carolina right now. You know, that are manifesting their life. So people are still there. I just wanted to share that understanding for the people who are listening. People are going to be listening in the future, right? You know, you know, this is a beautiful thing, man. You know, I want to ask you about this writing you wrote. And in the beginning, you write, it called For the Revolutionaries, right? That's what he wrote. And you wrote that in the book, Knowledge Itself, A Collection of Wisdom on the Science of Life, Science of Everything in Life, right? You know, you won the editor of the book as well. And you wrote a book, mm-hmm. You wrote a section called For the Revolutionaries, right?
That's right.
What do you mean by a revolutionary? What do you mean by that? And what's your understanding behind that?
I tell you this, that's a really, really old essay that got updated. I haven't reread that in a long time. So it's a great question. You go back to that.
Okay.
I'm
going to read the beginning part of it, right, what you said.
Oh,
right?
please.
And just add on to it. Okay. Say, for the revolutionaries. For the self-proclaimed revolutionaries today, it's all about anti-capitalism. Capitalism, the oppressor's most powerful weapon of choice, is seen as a cause of all of today's ills. However, oversimplification and shallow condemnation provide little support for actual development. Understand what capitalism impedes and what must be promoted are crucial to becoming a true revolutionary. Con lava D vote for the masses. You know, that's the beginning of that, what you said, right?
I think that what I tried to say there and what I think now, when I talk about revolutionaries, it's always this difficulty of having to deal with the oppressive society, you know, having to be forced to be successful in the oppressive society and yet not losing the reality that just because we engage well in it doesn't mean that it's acceptable, you know? And
yeah.
To me, capitalism, though, the realization of the evils of capitalism is one of the first great realizations, to me, of many revolutionaries, you know, certainly to me and myself. And to be a revolutionary is to understand that whatever system is here is unacceptable, you know? And that whatever system we are to make, though, isn't just to make the system work for us. It is to actually topple it and make a system that is right and exact, not something that just is viable to us. You know, so like, you know, a lot of the stuff to me is just militancy. You know what I mean? But, you know, where people want to change the society, but it's only so that they can master it better. They could conquer it better. They could utilize capitalism better, you know, and I've never seen that. I've always been militant toward that. So a lot of my idealism in that essay, that still exists today, you know, is about to realize that we are to live in contradiction. We're to accept that, you know, every next day we most likely are having to master aspects of the oppressive system. In this case, these first particular sentences, capitalism, you know what I mean? And but nowhere in the development of revolution is that system going to be acceptable in the decision, or when we have the greater ability to make decisions that are far greater for us. So, you know, and to put ourselves in the position of real revolution is to understand those things and not become complacent to that, you know, and to always be aware of those flaws, you know. After a while, people become successful in the society, even with the messages of revolution, that they end up not being revolutionary because they're successful in spreading the messages of revolution. And that's something that's important to me because I'm an artist, though. You know, I cover artists, though. So this is something that you know, resonates a lot with me, you know? Most of the revolution that we see today isn't really revolution, you know? It's just a success in capitalism, you know? A success in rugged individualism. The same type of mentalities that made early Americans great, you know, made early Americans conquerors, you know, and made the current state greater, you know. So, you know, with that essay, that's really what I was trying to say, you know what I mean? And I think that as a 5 percenter, to put that in there, the idea is no matter how much we engage the society, our reality, as I said before, is always going to be revolutionary. It always is going to, for it to be acceptable and embraced, and then to reach the level of embrace, it would change everything. It would revolutionize everything, you know. It would bring a lot of revolt immediately, for sure. You know, people start coming to realization, there's no mystery, God. I can't wait for others to do for myself. You know, there is such a thing as community. It's important. You know, all of these things, you know, that are only given lip service to, but they're not actualized. And when we got knowledge itself, that was the main thing that inspired us with the Father. You know, the teachings already said that the black man is God, but it's nobody really actualized that. No one said, we're not going to be submitting to the will of Allah, who came in the person of Master Far Muhammad, or anything else. We're the true and living God right now. Not tomorrow, not the next generation, but right now. And that's a revolution in itself.
Yeah, so, you know, when they say the revolution starts in the mind, right? Want to change your mind state. The Father, by the term civilizing people, he educated people from a criminal mentality to a revolutionary. He changed their mentality, and he revolutionized the teaching of the Nation of Islam, which was trying to spring wisdom, which people from a historical understanding, spring wisdom only intended for the ministers. It wasn't intended for any of the students to learn to spring wisdom. And you still can see some of these contributions today in Nation of Islam, aware of certain things like that, you know, in regard to elitism and certain things. You see that to this day. Where, you know what I'm saying? So the Father were very revolutionary by going out and teaching his truth to the people, you know. So he became a threat. Even at certain times, there was a lot of opposition toward people that came from that walk of life in regard to who he was, what he represented, right? Which is a great form of misunderstanding, you know, as a form of hatred, so forth and so on, right? But tell us a little bit about this organization, Low Life. What exactly is Low Life? What does it do? What's the origin behind it?
The Low Lives was originally a boosting crew that started in the late 80s. There were many crews in Brooklyn that were boosting clothes for survival. The particular founders of the Low Lives, they were doing it for survival. You know what I mean? And of course, the obsession with the clothing, the obsession with having it and the status of it, it had its negative turns as well and negative obsessions as well, you know, so it led to more crime as well, just as it led to more stability of money. And there's no doubt that the amount of efforts that the Low Lives put in influenced hip-hop immensely. You know, they led the fashion of hip hop from that, you know, origin year of 1988 and onward, you know. But over the years, what happened is that many of them grew up. They grew up and they grew out of the illegal crime, and they started to realize that what they were doing was also substantial in hip hop culture and the arts. And with certain founders like Thurston Howell III and others, they started to push out the music and the arts that they were doing as a collective force, basically rebranding that reality of low lives and not just a bunch of brothers with great brotherhood that survived through a lot of bad things and a lot of good things and tried to work that into hip-hop, and it became a hip-hop organization. Over the years, I've covered many artists, so hundreds, and many of them started to be the Low Lives, you know, and I became very, very peace with many of them, including Thurston Howell III, you know, Rakim Supreme Shabazz Alah, who's also known as Rudy Low, and many others, and some of them were 5 percenters, you know, like I mentioned, Rudy Low was a 5 percenter, you know, is a 5 percenter, I should say, and they saw the work that I was doing on whether on the hip hop level or in the community level as a 5%. And they let me know, like, this organization is about hip hop. It's basically an arts collective, an organization of fashion, music, arts, DJing. You know, you find everything. Photographers, you know, journalists as myself. You know, I may be the only one, but there's photojournalists, there's, you know, there's all kinds. And not, you know, many of us, though, we didn't have that life of boosting. You know, I'm from Brooklyn, but I didn't do that. You know what I'm saying? That wasn't my life at all. And the whole idea with the Low Lives is that concept of love and loyalty, the two L's that we call it, you know? And I was put down with the Low Lives in 2016. And, you know, it's basically, you know, it's really like a hip hop collective, you know? We represent that. We represent the unity of it, the brotherhood, the familyhood of it, and the artistic legacy of it. We would definitely like to be seen as. In other words, if people see things that come from Low Lives, they would expect it to be quality music, quality arts, quality writing, quality fashion, of course. You know what I mean? And brothers are doing immense things. You know, we're being recognized by Ralph Lauren, you know, being profiled by Ralph Lauren in his websites, his features, his books, his documentaries, but also doing fashion events in the name and all types of other events. Brothers as myself that cover the Low Lives, that write books. So we end up representing on many different levels. But that's what the Low Lives is. You know, it's a ultimate hip-hop organization and collective, you know, of you know, artists, you know.
As a hip hop writer, what exactly is a hip hop writer? What is that?
So, I've been writing since 1994, right? And I started writing professionally in magazines in 1986, right? And around 1995, before I actually got into a magazine, I realized that I'm only writing about music, you know? So it's not creative. So I'm thinking of like the first the elements of hip hop, the four major elements, the recognized ones, right? I'm realizing that what I'm doing is not part of the elements. Obviously, it's not an element of one of those four, but it also can't be an element because it's not creative, right? I'm just writing about the other artists, right? So I started to think that to be a hip-hop writer that would be recognized as a creative force in hip-hop himself, he'd have to be creative. And there were people that I saw that were inspiring me that were creative in their writings that are hip-hop, like Bones Malone, who, by the way, was also a Low Lives. And he had a column, and he wrote very creatively, and he wrote Sticks and Stones column in Vibe magazine. This inspired me, but it inspired me to take it to another level where I said, if I could write about the music, the technical pieces, interviews, features, columns, right? And also the most important, the music review. If I could write all of those things, not only technically well, better than others, but if I could write that creatively as well. In other words, being able to inject poetry and prose into it and making that piece of work that is about art, an artistic piece itself, literally an art on art, then what I was doing as a hip-hop writer would be an element of hip-hop, you know? And this is an idea that I had since 1995 that I wrote about in 1995, but I never could publish in a major magazine this way. Vibe, Double XL, Source, everywhere I went, just wasn't having it. They would not take my style of writing. So it was only when I could become an independent force that I started to develop what I thought it would look like, you know, and what it ought to be. And it's only really until the 2010s that I got free rein and decided to do it free rein and with no inhibitions. In the 2010s, when I started to work with my brother Paragon and my brother Kevlar 7, who returned to the essence, remembered in perfection, my brother Kevlar 7, and we started to do PremierHipHop.com, that I really started to write those technical pieces about music, but creatively done, you know, with poetry and prose embedded, you know, and led by throughout. So that's what I mean when I say hip-hop writer, someone that writes about this music or the arts, but they are also writing creatively. So the work that they wrote about, the technical piece that they wrote, is also an artistic piece as well.
Okay, so does this work coincide with the Power of Right show that you host? Does it coincide with that work? Or is it something different?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I've left the Power of Right show on hiatus for a while, but with all the things I'm doing. But the Power of Right show, the Power of Right name actually comes from, there was, when I first met my brother, Marcano, a.k.a. Prince Power Rule, that was around 2016, we had taken a picture together, and Bones Malone himself had seen the picture, and he wrote on it when it was posted on Facebook, and he had wrote on it Power Rule and Power Right, and I was so inspired by that to get that respect and love from a giant, you know, who I consider the father of this element that I do.
Yeah.
I said when I do, I wanted to do a podcast since I already do DJ Toshi's Classic Storm Radio podcast. I said I want to do a podcast that highlights a lot of the ideas that I have as a hip hop writer, engaging that, doing that, showing the way I do interviews a little bit differently. You know what I mean? And that's what the podcast is about. When I do it, you know. Even though all the work I do is in that vein, you know, but that was particularly my podcast to show that reality, you know. And it'll be back soon. There's so many people that that I know that are ready to be on the show. So it's just a matter of time. It's just I like to do everything at the highest quality. So I'd rather do occasional shows than to just rip out shows, you know.
I understand that. Tell us a little bit about some of your writing, some of your books and your writing, and how can we be purchasing them or obtain them, so to speak? Tell us about some
indeed,
of your writing.
Indeed, yeah. You know, I was editing books for a long time, and everybody was always asking for books from me, and writing in Premier Hip Hop since 2012, I really developed what I was doing, and I started to put these pieces together and started to get all of the old ideas that I've had for books, collect them, and really put them all together. And I've been releasing books independently since, and I have 6 books out now, most likely this year there'll probably be 2 more books out as I'm writing them and editing them now. But the first book I wrote was a collection of the most important essays I thought that covered the 2010s in hip-hop music. And I called that The Filtered Real, Essays from the Invisible Renaissance, because I called this era since 2010 the Invisible Renaissance, because there's so much of a high quality and a massive quantity of music that is of high quality that no one really sees. You know, if they see it, they might see a Griselda or a Rock Marciano or a Planet Asia, but they don't. Sean Price, Remembered in Perfection, right? The juggernauts and the people that peek through, but they don't see the hundreds of artists that are exceptional and astounding that are underneath. So that's why I started to call the era, and I collected that book of essays. So that became the first book I published. And after that, I started to make a series of books that I do every year called The Real Love. So I take all of the best, the music that I think is great. I don't make a list of what I think is the best, that I categorize them so people can make the choice of what they want to hear. And in these overlapping categories, they can pick out what interests them. And I give details and what I like to call science on music reasoning, builds on the music. And these Reel of books, the Reel of 2021 and 2020 and the Reel of 2022 are two other books I have that cover the years, the said years, in massive detail. The Reel of 2022 I released this year, and it covers 2022, and it's over 430 pages, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it covers over 800 albums, you know? And not just, you know, albums I think suck. They all have to be albums that I think are worthwhile, you know? So they can be almost an encyclopedic effort. And manual for people to find music that they would love, you know? And because I said that this is a real art form, I extracted many of the poems and prose that I've written embedded into reviews and features and interviews and columns over the years, and I made a collection of that poetry and creative writings called Art on Art. And that became another book that I wrote. So that's what I say. That's about four of my books. I also published a book of early essays that were crucial in my development in teaching my course, the Peace Course at a law school in Mecca, that I've been teaching for over 23 years, the longest held class there. In the history of our school, and that's called the Peace Course. Simply put, the Peace Course. So that's five of the six books. And in the last year, around November, after being given the opportunity to be on so many songs, people asking me to recite poetry and spoken word on their albums. One of my brothers, King Kamal, got me to do an actual album where I'm actually not just doing spoken word, but also rapping and emceeing. And it was my first foray into even writing raps. I had never done it over all these years because I've been around so many great MCs. I never tried. And we made our first album called Mantras Across the Medinas. And that album I released in this year in March 25th, and it was such a impactful album in my life. I wanted to keep the story. I wanted to remember the story and its history and the meanings behind these lyrics and these songs. And I wrote a book, a lyric book, detailing that story, my commentaries on all the lyrics, of course, all the lyrics from everyone, including the guest MCs that were on it. And even some profiles of all of the artists and producers that were on it. And that's the latest book that I have out, Mantras Across the Medinas, lyric book. You know? Most likely I'll make a lyric book for the new album I have out with King Kamal that we just released July 18th. We just released a new album July 18th called The Unlearn, produced by a dynamic production duo called True Cypher. And that album's called The Unlearned. I can't. So I'll probably make a lyric book for that, which will be shorter, but it'll be a quick, fun read for people that like this album, because I really think that the skills improve somewhat. You know, people are very happy with this album so far, you know?
Okay. Appreciate that. You know, you mentioned Law School of Mecca, right? And you mentioned the Peace Course. But what is the typical schedule, weekly schedule for the Law School of Mecca? What goes on doing on different days during the weekly schedule for people that are listening, or people are interested in visiting?
There's always civilization classes in the early evening to the late evening. During the day, there's always there's a storefront, so people can purchase things. there are always elders at the school that have impromptu classes and things like that. But the official classes are usually in the early evenings. I know for sure that I teach there every Thursday night. You know, and I've taught there every Thursday night since the year 2000, when I started in April of 2000. And the class actually stands for Political Education and Civilization Enrichment. Political education, how to deal with the outside world and all of its maneuvers and maneuverings and oppressive realities, and civilization enrichment, basically the science of everything in life, you know? So it's a depth curriculum. It's a very digital class, you know, since the 2010s, it's a very, very digital class, meaning that it comes with a large digital library to access. It comes with a curriculum, and it's a lot of work outside of the classroom, you know. My class, since COVID hit, I've also been streaming it and saving them on my YouTube channel, Sunya7, number 7. So for anyone that's interested, though, they can always check out a class. But to be a real student with me is to not just engage the classroom only. That's certainly a requisite, a necessary requisite. But also engaging afterwards, you know, and really continuing to build. Right? But that's what the Peace Corps is.
Okay. I like the sound of that. A lot of us don't hear everybody was talking about the 85, the 10%, and the 5%, right? What does that actually mean when you use those percentages? What do those percentages mean to the population?
Right. It's a general percentage to see the ratio of how stacked everything is, to show that the truth that we have, the knowledge of ourselves, right, that very few have it, that 85% of the people do not have it, right, and they are often led in the wrong direction because of it. These aren't people that are just savage, people that are just uncouth and uncivilized. It could be anyone that just doesn't know, okay? And then you have 15% of the population that's left, and those are those who know. And those who know always have the choice to do either the right thing with what they know and teach it and share it as best as they can, or to keep it for themselves and manipulate it for their own selfish means. And that would be the 10%. You know? So the 10% are those rich slave makers of the poor, right, who tell lies, who we are, the true living God. And we're the 5%. In other words, that we are willing to sacrifice, right, to be poor righteous teachers. We are willing to sacrifice, to share what we know to the best of our ability, right? And it doesn't mean that we're out there sharing what we want people to know. We're sharing responsibly. We're sharing what we truly think people can use at any moment, you know, whilst we stay as endless students of this knowledge itself. Because it will never always be proven. It will always be in the, continually proven that we are the true living God. So with that mentality, always researching, always proving, always finding something else. But that's really the percentage, you know, and that's in the, that's in the 120 lessons, which means that it's in the supreme wisdom of the Nation of Islam too, you know, so it's not a thing. That particular thing is not something that Allah the Father made up, you know. That's something that we have an understanding of.
Yes, sir. Okay. My next question is, tell me about your martial art experience. Do you teach martial art at Law School of America, or if I need to do it
I don't
time?
Teach at a law school in Mecca. I usually teach students away from a law school in Mecca just because, like right now, I don't live near a law school in Mecca. I live in a totally different borough, you know.
Okay.
So I make a trek to teach my class, you know. So the martial arts is something that's also embedded in the knowledge itself, because many of my elders were martial artists. That was a common thing among our elders in the beginning. And it became a tradition for us as well. And when I got knowledge itself, many of the brothers that were that were my god brothers in this knowledge, they also were learning the martial arts, you know. So we all learned from this particular original man, right? Black Seed, right? He wasn't an original man from Asia, named Seagung Bobby Whitaker, and really an honorary 5%er for us though, because he taught all of us, and he taught just the way 5%ers teach. He taught us for free as long as we worked hard and shared it with others when we were ready to and equipped and able to. And so the martial arts, particularly Shaolin Kung Fu, and with particular focuses in certain animal styles and Hungar and Wing Chun especially, those became things that we learned hand in hand with the knowledge itself. And, you know, over the years, you know, I will never consider myself a master of any kind. But after a certain amount of years training, my Si Gung, my master teacher, told me that I was ready to teach others and share what I know. And so that's what I do. That's what I do. You know?
Okay. I appreciate that. Again, I want to thank you for coming to our show today. Now that we're understanding, at this time, I'm opening the line up for a few callers. If you got any comments, statements, or questions, or if you got something to say, I'm going to open your line up. If you got anything to say, or anything to add on, or you want to speak about it, you want to make an announcement, please press 1, I'll open your line up. If you got anything to say at this time. Yes, anybody have anything to say, comment, or statement, open your line up at this time. Hold up right quick. Five, six, two, two, one, two. You have any question, comment, or statement at this time? 562-212. You have any question, comment, or statement, your line is open.
Okay, greetings, brothers.
Greetings, sister.
Hi. I was just enjoying the explanation and the way you guided us through your methods and the time you spent. I was appreciating that very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate being heard. You know, one of the things is like, communication skills are a big deal to me when I teach. And I always think, you know, everything for me originates as a writer. You know, this is something that my mother remembered in perfection. My mom, when she was alive, she really made me write, you know, and I did not enjoy it. You know what I mean? I did not enjoy it. But when it came time for me to do something, that ended up being the path that I chose, because it was all I knew how to do, like in a deft, skilled level. You know, I was a late bloomer. I never even tried rhyming or anything like that. So I was so behind on everything. But yet when I wrote, I was always ahead. And obviously I love it now. But when you write, you don't know how people are taking whatever it is you're writing until much later, you know, and, and noticing those differences, it's always a blessing to, you know, when I can, you know, engage and create in different forms. And I'm only saying that because of what you said. And now, like in the last couple of years, teaching in such a way where it goes digitally, where people can watch actual class sessions I have and I'm not there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to create songs. So, just think about that for a minute. I've written about the song for over 20 years, and then I make a song, and I make songs after all that time. You know what I mean? So it's so different. It gives me such a different perspective, you know. I even think about how it feels a great honor, because in certain genres that I look up to. So I didn't learn how to be a hip hop writer about music from hip hop writers. I always thought that in general they wrote about music badly. I actually learned how to write about music from jazz writers, you know, and the hero was always Amiri Baraka, because he did everything in jazz. So when it came to making this music, when it came to doing radio, when it came to doing other pursuits, it was always like, well, Baraka did it, I could do it, you know, I should do it, I could try it, you know. And it was always like that, you know. So you know, that was always the mentality, you know.
That's inspiring. But, how you did a differential between the 5%ers and the 10%ers, all that stuff used to confuse me. And the way people opened up and how they talk with you about things that people take for granted. They get a whole nother view. They get a better understanding of how the system works at a double interest.
Mm-hmm.
If you understand what I'm saying. I mean, like, you know, they, one hand they're confusing people, and on the other hand they're murdering people. And folks don't sometimes see that when people are locked up, that there's a lot more behind it than a person's action.
Absolutely.
And
you were expressing
a lot of that. I appreciate.
You know what's a good example of that? I always like to see is Andrew Carnegie. You know, you know, he was the robber baron, you know, industrialist. And when you look him up, it'll say industrialist and philanthropist. But, you know, they do an entire life of devilishment, you know, blood-sucking, robbing, amassing wealth of abnormal levels. But then it's almost like we have to feel grateful, because if he didn't decide at the end of his life to say, you know what, I think there should be libraries in New York, we wouldn't have had libraries. You know, so it's this kind of like contradictions that what I mean about being the revolutionary, you know? Most people will embrace the hypocrisy because they don't want to feel like a hypocrite, and they'll say, you know, well, he did good things, you know, so I appreciate that, and I'm going to try to be like that, you know? Instead of saying the contradiction, it's like, you know, they took everything from us, so at the moment they give us back books, I don't know why we have to be so, you know, engaged, you know? In fact, every time there is a measure of intelligence or a measure of information that we are given access to, it's usually because they've reached the level where they can control it. And now they need us to have a certain amount of information to utilize our minds better, you know, because there's a history of us creating everything, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you go just simply, like I always go with students, if you just go simply with African-American invention history, I mean, the entire foundations of this country is based on African-American inventions. And if they weren't invented, there's really no industry here, you know.
All the basics of their culture would not exist.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is why, like, it seems like sometimes it seems frivolous. I'm just writing about hip-hop music and things like that, even though I write about a lot of other things, but that's what I'm known for. This is a billion-dollar industry of thought and mentality and presentation, and it's influencing everybody.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
And it's a way, you know, some of the greatest writers I've ever taught, they were only writing rhymes, you know, and I would teach them how to restructure the lines, and they had essays, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, there's so much that we can do in so many ways, you know, but getting out of there, and like the whole idea of what you said about the 10, 5, and 85, a lot of the confusion comes is because it's usually wrapped in the lyric, And then the lyrics right. used as slurs. So when somebody says he's an 85, or like, that's, he's a dumb, blind, deaf and dumb, he's an idiot. And, you know, and nobody wants to be that. Like, no one thinks that they're that. So no one says, well, I don't have a knowledge of myself. I don't know what they say, so I must be a blind, deaf and dumb. And there's levels, you know? There's levels to everything. And that's never supposed to be used as like a term of like disrespect to the person, you know? We're responsible. If people don't know, it's the responsibility of the people that do know, not the people that don't know always, you know? It's the people to share it, you know? And so that gets confused, you know, with things and ideas like that.
Yep. People sometimes really have to know what they have to share and the time to share it sometimes, because it doesn't always cost for you to know that much. It just costs for you to understand something.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And this is the great difficulty of being a teacher, you know, because a teacher is just someone who shares, you know, but sharing is difficult. And sharing is difficult for most people, you know. There are many people that actually have a knowledge of themselves, and I would say are in my nation, but they're not really 5%ers. When we say that they're a 5%ers, we give them that title of saying that they're out there teaching and sharing in some kind of way. But not everyone is sharing because they just feel it's easier if they continue to excel and don't really go through the effort of teaching, which could expose you, you know, could put you in a bind of some kind of having to explain things.
Right.
But at the same time, though, some people realize that they don't have the natural gift of teaching, and that is something that they have to develop as well, you know. So it's a twofold thing, you know.
Yeah.
I think in my life, I always had the ability to teach. It was something that my mother did very well, so it probably stuck on me. But even before I got knowledge of stuff, I was always asked to explain things to other people or teach things to other people. So it became kind of simple to continue with that, or logical to continue with that. But it's certainly not a thing that, even if you have some natural ability, it's always something to learn from, because you have to you're always trying to figure out how to understand people and mentality.
Yeah, you want to reach.
Mentality.
Yeah. You want to reach people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But the way you've explained and expressed things, you give a view of both sides, and then you mix it, and then you advance it. You help a person to advance in it, and that's rare.
Yeah, you know, there's a great elder in my nation that passed away, right? And I was with him one time. And I had just started teaching, and he's like, you know, he's the Mount Rushmore, you know, he'd be, you know, and he saw someone outside eating swine, you know, he was eating the swine right in front of the school and passing by, and he just started cursing, and he you know, to me, and he was saying, like, look at this guy, I taught him, and he has the nerve to walk past here, he's just eating the swine like a savage. And I thought to myself, like, I don't think I'd last too long. I'm not going to last too long if I get angry like this and if I don't know how to let go. But at the same time, though, I've got to realize that I have to give people a complete perspective of what they're dealing with. You know what I mean? So if they make decisions, they're not forced into anything. If they really want to be there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, it's good to try to do those things with everything, you know? We deal with so much with fads and everything, and then we realize, how come nobody likes this anymore? It's because you didn't really have enough people that liked it in the beginning, that really loved it, that really cared for it, you know? It's like when I learned in the martial arts, though, the person that starts out quick fizzles the fastest, you know what I mean? And it's like that, you know? They might be excited they might be excited to throw a kick or do something in the movie that looked great. But then when you realize that, like, you kind of got to practice, like, one particular move a million times, practice lifting the leg in a very boring way 1,000 times, then you're like, this isn't really what I thought it would be, you know?
Repetition.
For the, yeah, and for those of us that like it, though, you know, we did it consistently every day, you know. And I just had the blessing of those type of teachers. You know, I think of my Seagung that taught me martial arts, and I think of my mother. They had that number 20 with me. My mother used to always be like, you got to read 20 pages every day. You know,
wow.
I read more than that every day, but and I shoot for that. But as a kid, that was like a million pages. So. Yeah, that was like 1,000 pages as a kid. And my Seagung ended up telling me that when I asked him, how could I be good at this? He said, when you do Kung Fu, you practice for 20 minutes every day, you know?
Oh, another 20.
So, yeah, so. Even when I go over, though, it's always got – I never practice for 19 minutes, you know what I mean? Like, it always – I have to – if I practice, it's got to be at least 20, you know? So,
yeah.
You know?
You sound like you got it.
But
you got it all.
I do the best I can.
Yeah. It was your introspect on dealing with the people that are locked behind, dealing with them is really a feat, you know, because you gotta contend with so much.
Absolutely,
with the adversity,
Yeah, because I think a lot of people, when you try to uplift the youth and things like that, or that have been through things like that, they kind of sell them like something rose-colored, you know. Doing the right thing doesn't necessarily mean you get the good things you want, you know.
No.
It may not, you know. So, you know, once people realize that, then they'll do something. But I don't think that, but I don't think anyone does anything of worth if they don't value and have actual principles. In other words, though, they come to a point, though, where they're going to do certain things and they won't see a physical gain out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just doing it for their principle, you know? They're just doing it for their principle. It has nothing to do... it really won't bring them anything, and it has no guarantees, you know. When they get to that level, though, then they've succeeded, you know. But until then, though, most people are just feeding them, you know, you can make it, you can do this, you can do that. This is a capitalist society. It's an oppressive society, though. It's designed where people aren't supposed to make it. So people have to be of the mentality where are you willing to fight in a more righteous way or are you not?
Instead of one out of many.
Right.
Bring the community along.
Absolutely, you know, and it's difficult. It's difficult, you know, because people come voluntarily into my classroom, and they don't always like it, though, because I don't sell them the pitch. You know, it's not a pitch. It's hard work.
It's an
advantage. The only thing I can say that they can expect is that I'll do it too, and that I've done it too. There isn't an assignment that I would give that I didn't do, so, or I'm not doing still, you know.
Good teaching method. I appreciated listening to your explanation this evening.
That's really peace. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Peace and blessings, y'all.
Peace.
I appreciate it, Mama Sakar. I appreciate it, Mama. Okay, hold on. Hold on right quick. 614-285. Yeah, any question, comment, statement, please do this time. 314-285, your line's open. Yeah, any question, comment, statement, please do this time. Any question, comment, statement, please do this time. Your line's open. Go ahead.
So if anyone's interested in any of the books that I have and things like that, all of my books are on Amazon. If you look up Sunez, S-U-N-E-Z, they're all under Sunez. Or also Skillustrator Low, Skillustrator, A-S-T-R-A-T-O-R. But if you write Sunez in the books, and if you go on my IG, I have the Linktree link there that's there. But there's only one Sunez, so it's easy to find, you know what I mean? Peace to my brother King Kamal, who I did all my two albums with. You know, it's been so great doing the albums with him. You know what I mean? He's my Quincy Jones, you know what I mean? And he really knows how to write a song, and he's the epitome of this era of music, though. You know, the unrecognized, unsung, immense talents that are out there, you know? And such a gift for songwriting, such a gift for choruses, has a melodic tone and flow of any kind. He's just, you know, incredible. And those albums are on Bandcamp as well. So if you go to, Sunez, King Kamal, K-V-M-A-L, King Kamal, dot Bandcamp, you'd find it and stuff like that. But if you type in Sunez in Bandcamp, you'll get me anyway. Right. But, that's the new album that just came out, though. Had a lot of fun with that, you know. Actually recorded that in 6 weeks. 6 weeks, that's it. That's all it took, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. I got one more question, right?
Indeed, please.
When you hear the name Joy Jack, the name.
You broke up a little bit. You said, when I hear the name George Jackson, what do I think of? I don't know if you can hear me. You said George Jackson, right?
Yeah, George Jackson.
Of course, yeah, great question, though, since this is what we're honoring, yeah. You know, Blood in My Eye is one of the first books I read when I became militant, you know? So, you know, I became militant in college, and this militancy, this radicalism, which I'm not saying in negative terms, I'm saying in the most wonderful terms, you know? That's really how I got the knowledge of self, you know, that radicalism. And it was because I took a course in Puerto Rican history thinking I'd pass it. Hey, I'm Puerto Rican. I passed a class. Easy. And I was embarrassed at how little I knew about the history of Puerto Rico as a colony, its oppression, its leaders, its music. I knew almost nothing. And what even embarrassed me even more was that I knew I'd get it. As I got better and became more intense with it, I realized I'd get an A, and it didn't matter because every other person in the class would know as much as I did, and I was embarrassed by that. And I started to study revolution out of Puerto Rico. I started to go back into the history of my brothers that are here, right? And I started to read all the revolutionary books I could read. And this is before I tapped in with the God Day Sun. And that's when I started to read even deeper histories, you know, initial readings, autobiography of Malcolm X, learning about the Young Lords, the Black Panthers. But one of the first books I remember reading, though, was Blood in My Eye. And what I always remember and I think about to this day is the sacrifice. Would I be willing to do something like that? You know what I'm saying? Would I be willing to have that fortitude that he had? You know what I mean? I'd like to think that I do, but I assume that it's not developed yet, you know? And this is the kind of mentality that I have, because I think that what he did was profound, you know what I mean? And the way that he wrote that, it was one of the few books that was it really felt, it read like a novel to me. And I felt like I was right there. And of course, you know, it really put it all in perspective. You know what I mean? And of course, eventually, I read other books, you know what I'm saying? As many books as I could. But when I think of George Jackson, I think about like the actual physical sacrifice. You know what I mean? It was the first time I really thought about a physical sacrifice that that felt real and viable. So like we learn about other figures, you know, like a Nelson Mandela or things like that, but that didn't really feel like this. And I had read George Jackson's book before I really even learned about other Puerto Rican revolutionaries like Pedro Albizu Campos, you know? So I had never gotten that feeling before, you know? So it was almost like an introduction to that sacrifice, you know? And it bugged me out, too, because this seemed immense to me. It seemed immense to me, and how could you not hear about this? You know, how could I never have heard about that? You know, and that was an immense thing for me. In fact, I haven't read these books in years. You know, and I remember reading Soledad Brother 2, as well, the prison letters. I remember reading those two. And those are the two books I remember reading. I read those two books. I'm pretty sure I read Blood in My Eye first, though. You know what I mean? And then I went and got Soledad, you know. But that was definitely the impact that I always think of when I think of George Jackson, you know. Just powerful stuff there.
Yes, I got one more thing before we end it. Are you familiar with Carlos Losambros?
No, I'm not.
Carlos Losambros, but known as the Puerto Rican George Jackson. He was the one to find the Nietos in Puerto Rico. You know him. You know him, the Puerto Rican George Jackson. I think his name was Carlos Torres. I think Carlos Torres, Erasio or something like that. You know, but he's the one that created the efforts. But before they got into the state they are in now, they don't go out to New York. You know what I'm saying? Which is totally different. But they were more they're more on a revolutionary tone because they were calling him the Puerto Rican George Jackson because he was fighting against the prisoners in the prison of Puerto Rico. You know.
Mm.
There was just some information I was just putting out there, you know, for people who are listening, you know, people want to research certain things, you know. I learned about some years ago, which I found very interesting, you know, especially when I learned about the triangle that Nieto, the Zulu Nation, the Lion King had at one time in particular that they had as a structure, as a triangle. I started learning about certain things like that, which is very interesting to me. I was like, okay. So who is his brother, you know? You know, in regard to certain things and how certain things migrate to certain places and become things. They develop, they morph into something different than what he initially created to be, you know? So that's the information you know, that I just wanted to share, you know, just to put out there.
Yes, please. I appreciate that. That's definitely something I want to research too as well, you know?
No doubt. You know, at this time, give us your final thought. What you want to leave us with? What are the final thoughts you want to leave us with before we end the show?
Well, you know, definitely I want to thank you for having me and having me expound on a lot of things I'm doing and a lot of my history. You know, it's always a blessing to share the history that I have and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And also I'm thankful that I could reacquaint it and put it in the position that it's always had in my heart, though, as a revolutionary career, if one could have one, you know?
Yeah.
I would like to think that the work in my career is to foment some type of revolution in the mind, in whether it's from the creative lane or it's from the intellectual lane, you know what I'm saying? And that's always been the goal. That's always been the mentality. I'm honored to be recognized, you know, by brothers that have a show like this, you know what I mean? And by you to put me in that context of that, because everything is revolutionary to me. Everything has to push us closer to a new day, you know, to a new economy, to a new this, whatever we decide that it must be in the most righteous way, and what puts us in this freedom to make that decision. That's, to me, what revolution is. And when we get there, you know, I hope, my hope is that whatever I do helps a little bit, you know?
True indeed. True indeed. I appreciate you for coming on our broadcast, you know, and just share your thoughts, your words, your energy, you know, do the work you're doing. Continue to have that passion on the commitment that you're having. You know, and if anyone, any little one, Conrad Switch by Enemy Lines, please check out Jordan University. You can find on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the name Jordan University. We all have a Facebook group. We also have a website, which is www.georgejackson-edu.com. Long live the position, long live the African movement, long live the guerrilla, and free all the cats and rabbit cities, free land.